Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. In late 2017, a human embryo that had been frozen for 24 years was born through embryo transfer. Embryo adoption offers human embryos the potential of life. So if you've ever considered the idea of embryo adoption, or you're thinking, wait, what? Hang with me, because I think you'll be intrigued by today's conversation concerning human embryo adoption. Welcome Mark Mellinger from the National Embryo Donation Center in Knoxville, and some friends he's brought along. Mark, welcome today.
Lynette, thank you so much for having us. Hope you are doing well there in Atlanta. It's great to be here. Yeah, we're thrilled about this opportunity to talk with your listeners about really the only way that you can become pregnant with your adopted child. That's how mind-blowing embryo adoption is. It also speaks very powerfully to God's heart for life, even at the tiniest stages. And of course, our other guests here are one of our NEDC adoptive families, Josh and Jen Scouten, and they are joining us all the way from Mesa, Arizona.
Oh, welcome, Jen and Josh. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. So you want to just, Mark, let them tell us what is NEDC, and then I'd love to hear how Jen and Josh got involved in this.
Sure. So you know, the NEDC, National Embryo Donation Center, was formed as a response to what we saw as a problem, a moral, ethical problem in the fertility industry. You know, back in the late 90s, it struck the head of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. His name was Dr. David Stevens. He was their CEO at the time. He saw that so many people were doing IVF, and usually, especially back then, doctors who would help with IVF would create more embryos than the couple who was doing the IVF was going to need to build their family. So for instance, let's say in a given situation, a couple may be experiencing infertility, only wanted to have two children in their idealized vision, but the doctor creates 10 or 15 embryos to maximize their chances. Well, often what was happening is they would get the number of children that they wanted, but would still have 7 or 8 embryos remaining. So that's a problem if you're a believer who shares our view that life begins at conception. You know, we believe once the sperm and egg have fertilized, we think Scripture is at least very, very implicit, if not explicit, that those are God's tiniest image bearers.
That's
the tiniest human life around, lives around. So, you know, the head of the CMDA saw that these lives were just being often disregarded and not treated with dignity and respect. So his vision was, we need to start some sort of ministry, some sort of outreach that will step in and be a place where these tiny lives that are in frozen limbo can be honored, dignified, preserved, so they can be stored, and then they can be adopted out to other families who want to step in the gap and give them a chance at life outside the womb and build their own families using these frozen embryos. So through a variety of conversations, you know, one conversation led to another. The head of the CMDA found our president and medical director, Dr. Jeffrey Keenan, who is a believing reproductive endocrinologist, and they, along with some other people, started the NEDC officially back in 2003, so almost 20 years ago. And it has been a wonderful ministry to be a part of. I've been here for 7.5 years. And so what we do is, yeah, we accept embryos remaining from IVF from anyone from all over the country. We store them at our medical partner's lab here in Knoxville, and then we adopt them out to families who have a heart for this, like Josh and Jen, who found us and came to Knoxville, did this even though they live all the way out in Arizona. You know, we've had 1,260 babies born in the almost 20 years that we have been going.
Oh,
that
wow.
Number has really accelerated the last few years. It was a trickle at first,
right?
But God has been good. He's grown the ministry. So Josh and Jen are just one of our wonderful, you know, gospel-centered success stories.
I have a million questions, Jen and Josh, for you guys. So, hey, first, just tell us about your family, just so we can know you a little better.
Sure. So we got married back in 2005 and waited a few years to have our children. We were, you know, mid to late 20s when we started having kiddos, and we had three children. We had a girl, a boy, and another girl. And we at first struggled to conceive, and it was a bit of a, you know, bit of a heartache sort of journey. And we, you know, wondered what God's plan was. And so we had always thought that adoption may be a process that we'd want to go through. And we also thought about in vitro fertilization, if that was going to be something that we would look at. One of our ethical conundrums, though, was in vitro, often, as Mark said, there are many times where the embryos are, there's a mass harvest of the embryos. We resolved very early on that if we were going to do that, that we would only be willing to harvest the embryos that we were willing to actually implant and give the opportunity for live birth, for the same ethical,
right,
moral reason. We believe that God, as creator, you know, we hear David cry out, you know, you knew me, you know,
yeah,
you knew me before the foundation of the world, right?
Yeah.
So we very much believe that life is in God's hands, and that life starts at the time of conception. And so we were very much convicted about how we would go about in vitro if that happened to be the case that we needed to go forward with. But it ended up not being the route that we had to go with. We were able to have natural birth with all natural conception and birth with all three of our kiddos. And then a few years after we had had our last child in the old-fashioned way, we ended up on vacation at one point, and we had been working in the 2-year-olds class, I think, or maybe the 1-year-olds class. Jen, what was it? What class were we working in with Nate and Maddie?
They weren't in our class yet. We were working with 2-year-olds at church, but we had observed these little twins in the baby section of the nursery. And we were just like, man, you know, they don't look like either set of their parents.
Oh, but all the ladies in the nursery said they were trying to figure out who do they look more like?
Yeah.
Who do
that's
they
what
look
we do
like
back there. Yeah.
And I'm looking at them going, you ladies are nuts. These kids don't look like either one of their parents. I don't know who they look like, right? So we were trying to figure that out. And we're sitting there, and I'm scratching my head, and I said, these kids don't look like either one of their parents. And we were talking about it on vacation with some of our other friends from the church. And we heard, well, yeah, that's because they're what they refer to as snowflake babies. They're embryo adoptions.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I had ever heard of something like that. And my mind was absolutely blown by the idea that you could actually adopt an embryo. Mm-hmm. I was shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And this seemed like an opportunity for us to have a concern that was on our heart, and a recognition also of God's value of life, that we could go forward, we could carry a child, which many, you know, many women after three children wouldn't be willing to do again. But Jen, in this case, you know, we talked it through and we decided that this was something we wanted to pursue. So we were certified to adopt, and we started to pursue this methodology. We started the process, and then COVID hit, and so we ended up going out in the middle of kind of the COVID concerns and everything going on there, and we went through all of the processes, and then had the implantation done, and now, you know, and then 9 months after that, we had our little boy Knox.
Oh wow. From Knoxville, sort of.
Yeah, that's exactly where it's from. Yeah, so yeah. We were trying to come up with a name, and we thought, you know, what better way to name him than where he came from, and to be able to share the story of adoption with him and why he was named Knox, right?
Yeah, that's just beautiful. So Jen, you know, for me, like after carrying, you know, I miscarried, then carried three, and you know, you go through all that, you just get a little weary. Was it hard for you? Like, what was the hardest part for you stepping into this?
You know, I just see God's hand so much in all of this. Like after our third child was born, I had told Josh, you know, I was 30 at the time, and I was like, I am so done being pregnant. I think any other kids need to come through adoption. It's a lot harder being pregnant in your 30s than it is in your 20s. And, I don't want to go through that with my body again. And Josh was like, okay, you know, that's great. And, you know, then when we heard about embryo adoption, and I had actually heard of it previously, but had never, like, it was always in correlation with families that had infertility problems. And so didn't even think about the fact that, oh, you know, you could do this if you are wanting to adopt. And so when it was brought up, and, you know, we had a 7-hour drive back home from vacation, and pretty much spent that whole 7 hours just discussing it and looking it up online. And, you know, Josh is like, you know, I know you don't really want to be pregnant again, but I think it would be wise of us to at least research this as a potential option. And, you know, the more we researched, the more I just, you know, felt so much peace from God of, you know, it is hard being pregnant, but you can do this. And what better gift to give, you know, your adopted child. And, you know, the more I researched it, I was just, I think I came to the conclusion quicker than Josh of, yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
This is the route we need to go. It's not going to be easy, you know, being pregnant at 36, but you know what, this is an amazing opportunity and I want to do this.
Yeah. Jen, you just said it so beautifully. You know, the Lord calls us, Paul taught us to keep in step with the Spirit. And when you know, it's like the Lord gives you a lightness to just, you know, even though you have people question you about it every, you know, you can't quite even explain it all, maybe even to family members, right? But the Lord just kind of carries you along and gives you this sense of deep, deep trust in Him that He's carrying this. And it's just even adoption, foster care, when the times are tough, or raising kids in general, you know, that he just calls us to stay in step with the Spirit. And I love how you shared that. So there has to be some things in this process that you learned along the way. What's some things that kind of hit you that you learned along the way that you really didn't know? I know you did a ton of research, but maybe something that just hit you like, oh, wow, you know, just a aha moment through this process.
So my biggest aha moment was when I realized that this actually brings this brings the rubber to the road when it comes to what your belief is on where life begins. And we had other believers that when we told them what we were going to do, specifically at my work, I said, yeah, we're in process of doing an embryo adoption. And I had a specific coworker that looked at me and said, why would you do that? And I said, well, what do you mean? Well, why would you, being somebody that is certified to adopt, give up the opportunity to adopt a child that needs a home? And I, in my own heart, it was almost crushing.
Right.
You know, you hear that and you go, oh man, I looked at her and I said, doesn't that really bring to mind where life begins? It really challenges you to affirm that you need to actually think about this. It's not just something ethereal. It's not something political. This is where the rubber meets the road. And this is where we actually have to decide or I guess reconcile with what we actually believe. It was an opportunity to share the gospel with her and to say, here is what I believe, and here is why I believe it. And I'll tell you, little Knox has given us so many opportunities to share the gospel. And we above all of these other things, above all the political input, above the social input, all these other things that go on, ultimately our focus is the gospel. And we need to share the gospel. And this has been one of those unexpected opportunities where his story gives us the opportunity not only to talk about the sanctity of life in the gospel, but also just the example of adoption, the adoption process. God refers to what he did with us as adoption, right? So, yes. So it's a great springboard into the gospel, and what a great way to be able to share. And that's probably for me the biggest eye opener was how many opportunities that this was going to give us to talk about the importance of all life to the Lord, and also an opportunity to explain the gospel to people.
Oh yeah, that is great. And I know this has to involve a lot of paperwork and a lot of hoops to jump through. And I don't know who wants to address that here with us today, but what does that look like?
For us, we decided that we were going to go the route of getting certified for adoption. That's one of the requirements that the NEDC has. So we decided that we were going to pursue that before we even applied with the NEDC, just, you know, make sure everything was, you know, lined up. If there's any problems or complications, we wanted to get that taken care of before we contacted the NEDC. So
did you do that in your state, Jen? You did that in your home state? So you're talking a home study and that sort of thing?
Yes.
Okay.
So we contacted a local adoption agency, and it actually ended up being the same agency that our friends from church had used when they did their embryo adoption through the NEDC. And so, and I should backtrack, that's how we heard about the NEDC. So we got together with the couple from our church that had the twins, and, you know, just started asking them questions, and they told us, you know, about the NEDC and going out there. And they were like, you know, you should research all the options, but, you know, we felt that the Lord was leading us this route. And, so that's how we heard about the NEDC. But so we use the same adoption agency that they did. So, and we ended up having the same caseworker. So it was, that made it a lot easier because she was actually familiar with embryo adoption. So many agencies, are not as familiar with it. And so they're not entirely sure how to go about the process. But that made it much easier and convenient for us. Yeah. And so it was the home study process, the medical background. And I'm trying to think what else was involved with
that. It's the same process that any of us go through building a adoption profile. And so, most all listeners will understand that process. So do you select, like, how do you go about selecting the embryo so you do a match fit, I guess, for your family? Is that right, Mark?
But that's right. I mean, you know, when you go with the NEDC, you can adopt in either open or closed fashion. Open means that you'll have some sort of limited relationship with the donating family. Closed means that you won't. And yes, so whichever route you choose, and I don't think we had this this feature up and running when Josh and Jen were going through. They can correct me if I'm wrong. But right now, what we have is we have an online donor database. So what you do is, you know, once you have cleared a couple of key milestones in the program, and it's time for matching, you get access to that. You choose which direction you want to go, either open or closed. And you literally are scrolling through profiles. Usually they're going to be at least a couple hundred either way that you'll be able to go through. And you're going to see the basic demographic information about the embryos or the people who were involved in the creation of the embryos, you know, stuff like height, weight, hair color, eye color, all that sort of stuff, full genetic and health histories to the degree that those are available. If there are pictures of either of the donating parents and any offspring that they've had, those are included in the profile. And often you'll even be able to see things like, I mean, obviously ethnicity, things like that are important to most people. But sometimes couples who are donating will even include what you might consider trivial things, favorite book, favorite movie, music, yeah, genre, all that sort of stuff. So it's so the information is really fairly complete. And, you know, our couples are just able to reserve the embryos that they would like to try with on that online donor database. So from their phone or computer screen. Now I'll let Josh and Jen talk to their experience. I don't think it was quite like that when they went through a couple of years ago.
It was different. It was still hard copy. Many families that are going to the NEDC have gone through a fertility struggle, and they have gotten to a point where they either maybe they've gone all the way through IVF and it didn't work for them, or whatever it might have been, and they didn't have embryos that were actually viable of their own. And so they decided now that they want to go and they want to adopt embryos. And oftentimes these families that do this, they want to be able to have genetic siblings. So, and this isn't exclusively this route, but oftentimes that's true, you know. And so they're looking for a profile that has multiple embryos. So if they want to have three children and they haven't had any, you know, they may look for one that's got, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, however many that are still reserved, that are genetic siblings. And that's a very common practice, you know, to look for the larger number of embryos. Well, in this scenario, we knew that we were looking for one. And so what we decided on early on was, we're going to look through the profiles that have one or maybe two embryos available, knowing that they are less likely to be ones that are selected, and just had a heart for the, you know, the least of these, those who are, let's call it, less desirable.
Yeah.
Just on a number, right? On a count. And so because of that, we started looking through those profiles, and we went, by the way, anyone who's listening to this, if you do get the opportunity to look through profiles, I'm going to advise you very strongly. Don't take your wife out to dinner to do this. learn from my mistake.
Exactly. I mean,
we went out to dinner with these profiles, and we started reading through them, and some of them have letters with them.
Yeah.
They'll have letters from the family. We chose to do a closed adoption also. So we don't have a connection with Knox's genetic mother and father, but there's these stories in there. And I will tell you that when you read these stories, some of them are absolutely heart-wrenching, because you will get notes sometimes from the families. And oh my goodness, there were some of them that we read through, and I mean, we couldn't help but cry. And you know, that some of these stories were deeply personal and deeply, deeply, you know, just agonizing as to why they had to give up their embryos. in some cases a parent had died or somebody had a debilitating injury or whatever it might be, there was a host of different issues. And so I also want to encourage people to be, you know, don't be quick to judge as to why children or why embryos are being given up. And that's true for children too, right?
Right.
We want to be careful in our assessment of why this is happening. And in some cases it is lack of wisdom, but there are a lot of cases where it is just a circumstance. So we had the opportunity then, as we looked through these profiles to read through them, and we found one that seemed to really fit. And he had been tested for gender and was shown that this was a male. And we were like, well, that would be a great fit. You know, Robbie, our second, our boy, he was like, I want a brother, you know? And so we were, you know, that certainly was not our our criteria, but we decided, we did decide on that embryo. And then we had a few backups also that we did not know the gender of. And, you know, that was kind of some of the selection process. And when you go through it, it's a really tender moment that is hard to describe. And one of the things, you know, we actually in our car ride home from our fellowship group at church last night, we were talking to our kids about adoption and how our son asked us, our oldest son asked us, do we, you know, hey, we probably, he made a statement. We shouldn't talk about the fact that Knox is adopted, right? We don't want to tell him this when he gets older. And we said, no, buddy, this is a great story.
Uh-huh.
You know, this allows us to talk with him about how sweet it is that he was selected. You know, I said to them, you know, listen, you guys, we didn't choose you guys, right? You were given to us as a gift from the Lord in a way that is super special in and of itself, but we got to actually go in and select individually, similarly to how God chooses us, right? I mean, what a great example of the Lord's providence and how we get to participate in something that is on a much, much smaller scale.
Yeah.
But just a sweet and tender way to be able to describe the Lord's providence and mercy.
Thanks for sharing that, Josh. You know, and Mark, what's been some of the misconceptions that you've seen at the NEDC be able to kind of overcome? Because, I mean, you've done that for me today, just hearing Josh and Jen, your story. But what's been some of those misconceptions, maybe within the church, that, you know, you've seen this be able, you know, just the testimonies of these families been able to kind of overcome?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think one, I would think of a couple, and one would be the one that Josh alluded to a few minutes earlier. I have certainly heard people say, well, why would you do this when there are already children out there who are in need of a home? And it's very simple. The response to that is clear. You don't get any more vulnerable than a tiny frozen embryo.
Yeah.
I mean, who's more helpless and in need of a loving family than a tiny embryo, right? So what you have going on is, as Scoutins have alluded to really beautifully, you have an echo of what God does for us in the gospel. We're in desperate need. We can't do anything to save ourselves or make ourselves right or get eternal peace, right? We can't do that. So what happens? God places his love on us so that we can proclaim his excellencies. here on Earth, which is super important, but most importantly, so that we can have peace and see His face and be in His presence, right? For joy inexpressible in eternity. And you like Josh said, it's a very tiny echo of that, but you do have that echo going on here in the gospel. So we're all of the above adoption people. That's one reason we love what you're doing, and we love being on your podcast. I think all forms of adoption are great, and as you've said, You do this in such a way as you believe the Spirit is leading you. Mm-hmm. For a lot of people, embryo adoption will certainly not be the way that they're going to be involved in caring for the orphan. And that's okay. The other, domestic, international adoption, wonderful. All the forms of adoption are equally good.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd also asked, Lynette, you know, is there anything else that you've had to overcome? And I would say a second thing, especially with regard to the church, would be this idea that this work promotes IVF. There's I would say within evangelicalism, which all of us on this broadcast are evangelicals. You know, I would say generally evangelicals do not have moral questions about IVF, but I wouldn't say that there are no evangelicals who are uncomfortable with it. I know a lot. You know, I've been in evangelicalism my whole life, and I know a lot who have some reservations that should be seriously considered and prayed about when it comes to doing any sort of assisted reproduction, and for good reason. I understand that. We aren't taking a position on IVF in this ministry, and that's what I tell people. We are here as a solution. Whatever you think of IVF and assisted reproduction, we are here to step in and be salt and light in an industry, the infertility industry, whatever you want to call it, that has really, in a lot of ways, gone off the deep end and placed fast and loose with human life. And we're grieved by that. We would love to see the day when the industry, by God's grace, becomes more redemptive. But that's not us. We're not out for that. We want to be salt and light. So we don't believe that we are promoting IVF one way or another, or forcing people to do something that they are uncomfortable with in their consciences. We'd never want to do that. Everything we do revolves around the sanctity and dignity of the human embryo. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that's unique about our ministry. We love stories like the Scoutons, the adoptive families who are able to add to their families or build their families with these embryos. We love that we're able to resolve the moral dilemma for the people who created them, and in most cases were just experiencing tunnel vision. They wanted a child so bad they weren't thinking of what would happen when they had the size family they want and had embryos remaining. So we love helping the couples on each side of it, but we're here first and foremost for the embryos. Everything revolves around that. So, you know, I could see and sort of a sub point of that. I've heard some people say, well, you know, if you have embryo adoption available, isn't that just going to encourage the irresponsible practice of IVF, of creating too many embryos? Like, people will know, people, couples who are going through infertility and going through IVF, won't they just know that, oh, well, whatever embryos we have left, we can just donate through embryo adoption? I can understand. I might have some reservation and pause if I thought that was happening or that there was any chance that was happening. I've seen no evidence of it. I don't think that it is happening. And what I still hear mostly from couples who are on that end of this equation is embryo adoption was an option they didn't even know about when they were involved in IVF. So it was a good question, and those are the main reservations I would hear and sometimes walk through with other believers. There have certainly been occasions to talk through all those things.
Well, when I first heard about this, like I said, we were not even living in Atlanta at the time, and the Brewer family with Orphan Voice, they helped walk us through our first adoption with our sweet daughter. And so I just trust them. I've watched them just give their whole life to helping orphans find homes and the fatherless. But he called me about this, and and he called them snowflake babies, you know, Josh, like you said earlier. And I was like, wait, what? Like, I couldn't wrap my head around it. And that's why I'm so grateful to have you on today to help us clear this up and to offer this option to families who God may be just moving in their hearts to adopt embryos that are just waiting for a family. Because I love what you said, Josh, that life is in God's hands and it does start at conception. And so that's where rubber meets the road, like you said. I believe with all my heart that the absolute best thing that could happen to frozen embryos is not to be left in a, you know, that frozen, forgotten state, but to be welcomed and adopted into a loving family. So Jen and Josh, thank you for sharing today. Mark, thank you for teaching us so much. And we hope to see this grow within the body of Christ. So thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.